with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome in to hour two of the Lombardi Line, presented as always by BetMGM. We're coming to you from coast to coast. Former NFL executive Michael Lombardi out at his office in Jersey. I'm Stormy Bonantoni, live from our VSiN studio in downtown Las Vegas at Circa Sportsbook, inside Circa Resort and Casino. Got a great final hour ahead, talking lots of NFL headlines, news, notes. It's college football week here at VSiN as well, so we'll get a breakdown of the Big Ten with VSiN writer Aaron Moore in about a half an hour. It's also MLB trade deadline day, Michael, coming up at 6 o'clock Eastern. Justin Verlander, what's going to happen with him? That was good to get some perspective, though, from the GM himself, Will Hill, moments ago.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, but he has that no trade clause, so he has to prove where he's going to go.
Yeah, he's got some power.
You know, that makes it a lot tougher for the team to get the most value that they want for him. And so, plus they get away from the contract, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a bonus as well.
The Dodgers likely the best trade partner assets-wise, but according to Bob Nightingale, says the Astros, his former team, heavy favorites given the connection there. Also seen some reports over the last 24 hours that the Orioles are among teams actively pursuing him. The Padres, a name that was thrown in the mix as well. And the Mets obviously trading off a lot of key pieces at this point. So a path to potentially fully unload for that squad. But that's enough baseball. This is a football show, so we'll get right into it, Michael. Every day we've been getting
said the Orioles, I had to almost double check. Are we sure? I mean, like, it's remarkable, right? I mean, the Orioles are 10 games ahead in the win column over the Yankees. I mean, do you imagine what Steinbrenner would do if he were alive to see that? Oh, my gosh.
Good stuff, as always. I wish it's pretty incredible given how tough that division is in the AL East to see the Orioles raising to the top. It's very different to the eyeballs. It's like when we talk about the Lions being the favorite in their division, like since when?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just, but at some point it comes around, you know, and the Lions, we'll see, you know, we'll get a good look if the Lions can handle the pressure that they're under, because no one's going to take them lightly with all this publicity that they've attained during the offseason.
Every day this offseason, Michael, when it comes to the NFL and other sports and topics as well, we've been getting a gauge of what's on Michael's mind. Curious what's been getting your wheels turning today.
Well, I really, you know, a lot of things happened in Buffalo yesterday, and there was a lot of positivity in Buffalo yesterday. A, they're getting a new stadium, which is great. But their owner, Terry Pegula, who suffered a stroke, her daughter's a world-class tennis player, was talking about it and how her sister basically saved their mother's life. So she came to practice in a car. You know, she's rehabbing. She's not quite there yet. So that positivity is certainly great for the Bills and their fan base. And then watching DeMar Hamlin come on the field from where we were on that Monday night in Cincinnati to watching him put back on a uniform, to me, is just an incredible experience. And it's so, so rewarding and so fulfilling. And then to have the owner who went through her struggles be there at the same time. So that's kind of been on my mind. I mean, you know, we get so caught up in football and all the things that happen. There are personal stories that make a huge difference. And Buffalo had two of them yesterday that are really important. We were talking during the break, you know, are you worried about DeMar Hamlin getting hit and all that? Look, I know this, and I think DeMar Hamlin knows it as well as anybody, since the medical people saved his life on that field in Cincinnati. They wouldn't put him on the field if there was a slight chance that he couldn't play, or he was going to re-injure himself or have the same thing happen again. So I feel really comfortable with that. I just feel like the journey that this young man has taken is so powerful that we can't really talk enough about it.
Yeah, and I think more of the thought process, at least that producer Steph and I were talking through when it comes to that taking hits or hitting, I guess, obviously in the role that DeMar Hamlin plays, is being a teammate of his. And, you know, that first time that you're out there in pads and you take a hit, you're just like, okay, like, I just don't want to be a little bit uncomfortable or a little bit hesitant still. But when you're on the football field, I know those things kind of go out of your mind a little bit. But to your point, Really, really happy that DeMar Hamlin is back out there. And odds on minus 285 favorite in the comeback player of the year odds this season. You have to imagine if he just gets on the football field in a regular season game, that's a win right there after suffering cardiac arrest and his heart stopping on the field that Monday night football game a season ago. We did hear from DeMar Hamlin for the first time this training camp yesterday.
Man, this is a football. You can't hit that field with no hesitation. You know what I'm saying? You put yourself in more danger by doing that. So, you know what I mean? Like I said, I made the choice to play, you know, but I'm processing 1,000 emotions. You know, I'm not afraid to say that it crosses my mind of, you know, being a little scared, you know, here and there. But, you know, like I say, my strength is rooted in my faith, and my faith is stronger than any fear. And, you know, so that's what I want to preach up here. And that's the message I want to spread onto the world. That, you know, as long as your faith is stronger than your fears, you can get through anything. And so that's what I'm living by right now.
Love that mentality. Great. And obviously rooting
Great
for
message.
This young man. But Michael, yep. Exactly what he said right off the top of there. When you're on the football field, you got to have no hesitation.
Right. And look, Buffalo last year, he played because of the injuries to Poyer and Micah Hyde missing most of the season. Both of these safeties for Buffalo are over 30 years old. Both of them have had some injury history over the last couple seasons. And both of them are really good players. Make no mistake about it. But they are declining in their skill set. They are aging. And that's what happens, right? And so I think, for me, they need that. Now, they signed Taylor Rapp from the Rams as an unrestricted free agent. They have Dee Marlowe, who they traded with for Atlanta. But they're going to need Hamlin to play kind of like he was last year. That's why he was on the field. There were injuries. He got called to duty last year. And there's a spot here because Buffalo is built down the middle. It's really important that their middle linebacker, you know, plays well. They'll have a new middle linebacker this year in Terrell Bernard, who they drafted in the third round. Matt Milano is important to them. And their inside people, their defensive tackles, whether it's Daquan Jones or Ed Oliver, the middle of Sean McDermott's defense is critical, and that's why those injuries last year, I think, really affected him.
And he also said when talking to the media yesterday that he has a lot of goals he still wants to achieve playing this game, and it seems like there could be some real opportunity this season should he be in shape enough to be at that point. I mentioned the comeback player of the year market where he's a massive favorite. I've seen anywhere between minus 285, minus $3, and then it is a steep jump after that, 20-1 the next four players after DeMar Hamlin. Do you think that it could be worth taking a flyer on one of these other guys just because the odds are so significant, or is it a St. Jude's play given the thought process that DeMar is going to win no matter what if he hits the field?
I mean, Trey Lance is on every list. It's amazing. I'm just looking over here at the list. He's on every list. It's unbelievable.
It always
he's not
comes back
play,
to Trey Lance.
And yet he's on every list. I don't know how it happens. You know, the guy that I'm surprised isn't on this list is Deshaun Watson. Where's he?
He's 60-1.
Why is Tua 60-1?
Yep, so he didn't make this graphic because he's a little bit longer of a shot.
Oh, I would play 60-1 on him. I think
really?
I think if they are good and he plays well, he may not be the MVP, but he could be the comeback. He fits the comeback player. I think the comeback player is about changing your game, right? And certainly, you know, Deshaun Watson's got it. 66-1, Stormy. You know, I mean, Tony Pollard, what's he coming back from? The injury in the playoff game? Are we serious here? I mean, how is he a comeback player of the year?
Well, I mean, he's a very long shot.
How about Derek Carr? How is Derek Carr? Like, Watson was bad last year. Carr wasn't great, but
Michael, that's why Jared Goff was getting play last year for comeback player of the year potentially. And you're like, what is he coming back from? Just being bad? You know, I mean, but this is such an interesting market that there's not clear guidelines for what it means to be a comeback player of the year. My only pushback on Deshaun Watson, Michael, would be that
push it back.
Yes, even if he does have this like monster season, so much of this market can also be driven by narrative, and given all of the off the field stuff and the reason he was suspended in the first place, I'm not sure that he would get voters playing him in this.
I don't disagree with that. I don't, but I mean, what's Tua coming back from? He missed 3 games or 4 games. Like he played, you know, when he threw the ball, I mean, when he had his receivers, look,
this
I
market
understand.
Is like the weirdest of all of the awards markets every single year.
Yeah, I mean, like John Michie didn't play last year. How's he coming back? I know he's coming off of the leukemia, but, I mean, you know, Bryce Hall's coming off an injury. Okay, I got that. Russell Wilson's coming off of being bad. Cooper Kupp's coming off an injury. But I think you got to tie it to winning. What's Dameon Pierce coming back from? That he was a good player last year. What's he coming back from? Trey Lance, what's he coming back from? He didn't play.
With
Jimmy Garoppolo, he's 50-1. Jimmy Garoppolo had threw 16 touchdown passes, 4 interceptions. He was had one of his best seasons in his NFL career. What's he coming back from? An injury?
Yeah.
Is that what it qualifies?
A lot of guys coming back from injury win this award. That's like what it normally is, I feel like.
Yeah, I get that. But, you know, if you were a good player, like Hamlin's coming back from a significant – like, injuries are part of it. Like, Watson – I get what you're saying. He's not going to carry the electorate vote because of his behavior off the field. Understandable. However, that being said, he was so bad last year and he missed so many games that, to me, he qualifies whether he wins it or not. But if he improves his play, he's got to be in that conversation. He won't get it, but he should be.
Yeah, I'm with you. He was somebody who was considered at one point a top 3-4 quarterback in this league, a potential MVP, led the league in passing yards just a couple of years ago. So, and the expectation is for him to get back on track this year. I just think from a voting standpoint, he might not get it, which is why the odds are what they are. But I like what Steph just said in my ear. We need to get a most improved market because comeback player of the year, most improved, have them be separate things.
Exactly.
Okay, we got to step aside. Plenty more NFL talk throughout the course of the show, including when we come back. Some more training camp burning questions. We looked at a couple of the contenders yesterday and what they might need to overcome here to have success. A couple more when we return.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We have a preseason football game this week. The season is oh so close, and the GM Shuffle podcast is a must listen for any and every football fan. You've got our guy, Michael Lombardi, former NFL general manager, giving his unfiltered opinion on players, teams, and coaching decisions every Monday and Thursday throughout the season. You can download and subscribe to the GM Shuffle podcast from VSiN and DraftKings today, wherever you get your podcasts. This week as well, I know Thursday, you guys are continuing the Blue Chip, Red Chip series. You got edge rushers this week breaking down the top guys.
Yeah, that shouldn't be too hard. That'll be an easy list to come up with because they you know it's easy to see their impact on the game. I guess the decision's going to be who's one, Micah Parsons or Nick Bosa? Who are you making one, Stormy?
Do you even have to ask? Do you even have to ask? If you don't have Nick Bosa on there, we're going to have a talking to when I'm back on the show that day.
I think I'm going to go one. I think I'm going to put them both one. Here's the thing I would say
1A,
to you.
1B.
And take your – well, take your fan hat off for just a brief moment. But Parsons' ability to move around and line up almost anywhere across the offensive line makes him uniquely different. You know, whereas Bosa, when he puts his hand in the dirt, you're scared to death. You can't block him. But you can slide the protection to him. When Parsons lines up over on the right side of the offense, and then he shifts over to the left side in the middle of the snap count, and all of a sudden you can't change the protection, that becomes a little bit more of an issue.
I'm just saying, you look at the numbers the last 2 years, Michael, who's been better?
I'm not arguing with you. I just said it was going to be, you know, I'm sure I'll, you know, I'm just making a point. That's all.
It's fair.
I agree with you.
I'll allow it for now. I'll listen to the full breakdown on the pod, though, Thursday and see if I've got any rebuttal for you. But for now, let's get into some more of these training camp burning questions. Yesterday, we did talk about the San Francisco 49ers and some of their questions, Nick Bosa and his contract being one of them. But let's keep it going. With some of the contenders, we just talked a lot about DeMar Hamlin. So how about we go Buffalo Bills in this spot? What do the Bills need to focus on to finally get over the hump this year? They've been in this window to contend for a Super Bowl. Haven't made the big game since I was 2 years old in 1994. How do they get over the hump?
Well, I think they have to become more physical offensively. I think they need to be able to control the pace of the game. They need to be able to take the ball and put it in someone else's hands in the run game other than Josh Allen. and they need to utilize an offensive line that's more physical and really can push people around. And defensively, they need to be able to handle the size. They're an undersized defensive team that, as the year went on last year, they got worn down. Now, Jordan Phillips is one of their bigger tackles. He's on PUP. Can he play? So, you know, Ed Oliver's really a sub linebacker. I know a sub nickel rusher. They paid him a lot of money, but he's better in that role. So, for me, it's about physicality. I mean, the Cincinnati Bengals walked into Orchard Park last year with a backup offensive line, with third-string offensive line, and kicked their butt. And their defensive front of the Bengals kicked the Bills' butt. And everybody, me included, were talking about how the Bills were, you know, going to be an advantage playing on a field that they're accustomed to. That advantage went to Cincinnati. So I think that's what they have to do.
A 13-3 season, you know, Josh Allen and the injuries that he had certainly impacted his play down the back end of the year. Win total this season, 10.5. When it comes to Josh Allen, I know he's said publicly that he's going to try to be not less physical of a runner, but just take less contact as a runner. We know he's got the big body, has been able to protect himself largely in his career, but if you want career longevity at the position, that he maybe has to change that a little bit. And with that being such a big key of the Buffalo Bills' success offensively, how much does hearing that from that quarterback stress you out a little bit if you're a believer in Buffalo?
Well, I to me, they're only a good offense or an explosive offense when Josh is the runner, when he's the main guy, especially when they get into the red zone, right? And so that's where you really get – you have to find a way to where you can't get him hurt. I mean, his accuracy last year, and I know this doesn't show up in the stats, because in 2021 he threw at 63.3% completion percentage. Last year in 22, 63.3, exactly the same. 36 touchdowns the year before, 35 this year. 15 interceptions 2 years ago, 14. I mean, it was almost identical, right? It was almost identical to the season, but I thought he played better in 21 than he did in 22. I thought he was careless with the football, and I thought he missed some throws that he should have made. And yet you can't really find it in the numbers. He got sacked more times than going back to his second year in the league. He was sacked 33 times. So I think they've got to find that balance, and they've got to really take some of the burden off him, because the more he carries, like he did when he got hurt, you know, and he's running the football as much as he's running, I mean, I think it's going to be a real problem. I think you got to be really careful of that, because he does take a lot. I mean, he averaged almost eight carries a game. And that was what he was averaged in, and that's the most in his career, going back to even his rookie year when he was just a ball carrier.
Yeah, and it was a big subject of conversation throughout the year without Brian Daboll being there, if maybe that was a little bit of a reason for the reason that things changed for Josh Allen. But to your point about the numbers, it is interesting that it's not really reflective in some of the key stats that we always look at when it comes to Buffalo. And I also think, by the way, the stuff with Stephon Diggs, I feel like that was a little bit overblown. I think that they'll be fine this year, but just wanted to put a bow on that conversation. You mentioned the game with Cincinnati. Let's go Bengals, where there is a significant injury to the star quarterback for Cincinnati, the calf strain for Joe Burrow. With his injury changing the way that these guys have to practice on offense, how much will that impact their ability to prepare for the start of the season in your mind?
Well, I think when you look at Cincinnati last year, they struggled. I mean, he missed all of last summer with the appendectomy, right? And he was off the field. And he comes out and he opens up the game against the Steelers, and they move the ball up and down the field, but they turn it over five times, you know? And he throws for almost 300 yards, but the five turn at 30. How about this? They had 32 first downs in that game, the Bengals did. And the Steelers only had 13, and yet the Steelers won the game 23-20 in overtime. And then the next week against the Cowboys, they lose a close game 20-17. The Cowboys won that game. So I think this year, for me, Zach Taylor's got to start faster, right? I think they have to start faster, because if they're 5-4 again at the bye week like they've been the last 2 years, as good as the teams are in the North, are they going to be able to overcome that? Somebody is going to get left out in the AFC. There's too many good teams there. Somebody is going to get left out. I would say everybody has a chance to make the playoffs, with the exception of maybe the Colts with a rookie quarterback and maybe the Houston Texans with a rookie quarterback. all the other teams have a chance. You could argue one way or the other.
The Cincinnati Bengals 12-4 a year ago, win total 11.5 this season. And that week one opener at the Browns, you talk about the struggles that they've had with him missing preseason time. And that week one game is going to be a tough one, especially with how high you are on Cleveland this year.
Yeah, it's going to be hard. And they don't start fast, right? They don't. I mean, again, Cleveland beat them 32-13 in Cleveland. And, Cleveland dominated the game. Cleveland moved the ball up and down the field on them. And, look, Cleveland knows how to play them. And if they start slow, if they do the same thing they did against Pittsburgh, which is turn the ball over, they won't beat Cleveland. And right now they're the favorite.
That we've talked Cincy in terms of contenders. We've talked Cincinnati, Kansas City, Philadelphia, San Francisco, and Buffalo now. Is there another team that you would consider a contender but have one burning question about that could sway you one way or another?
Oh, boy, there's a lot of Miami. Miami's a contender. I know Jalen Ramsey's injury affects them, but they're good on defense with the exception of their corner. But we don't know where Tua is, and we don't know where their offensive line is. I mean, I think it's interesting. Earlier in the show, you mentioned that every year Kyle Shanahan's had a quarterback injured.
Yep.
That's not just happenstance. That's a lot to do with the projections. That's a lot to do with what they asked the quarterback to do. And it's the same thing in Miami. At least Kyle runs the ball to protect his quarterback. My man in Miami, McDaniel, he don't run the ball at all.
Which doesn't make sense, Michael. He was the run game coordinator guru guy.
I know, but everybody loves him. Everybody loves him because he's funny and quirky at his press conference, but nobody challenges him on the subject. Like, I'm telling you, if he's 31st in the league in rushing attempts, he will go through two quarterbacks. He'll go through Tua and Mike White again.
He was asked, speaking of him being like quirky personality guy, he was asked about Eli Apple obviously being brought in with the Jalen Ramsey injury. And he said, a fruit? Oh, Eli.
Yeah, I mean, I saw that. I mean, now he's becoming a character. Look, at some point, he's going to have to become a head coach, not a character.
I know he has good relationships with his players, and that is something that works for them. But I think what would work for them even more is a quarterback that stays on his feet. So we'll see how things play out and if he is able to start running the football a little bit more this year. I get that it's hard when you have the weapons that you do in the receiving game. You want to take advantage of those toys. But you also need to have a guy being able to get them to rock. We got to take a break here. When we come back, we'll turn our attention back to college football, breaking down the Big Ten with VSiN writer Aaron Moore. Still to come this hour as well, Lombardi's list, his top five NFL stadiums everybody needs to visit. Plus, where is Bojangles on the fast food rankings from Matt Eumanns? We took a step up. Not enough. Not enough, ladies and gentlemen.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
That was the voice of the great Brent Musburger. I'm going to try to do my best here. Soon you will be looking live at the 2023 college football season, and VSiN's here to help. Our college football betting guide features best bets from writers and on-air personalities, along with team previews for all 133 FBS teams. If you want the best and most comprehensive collection of picks, predictions, and previews, now's the time to join us. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber. The College Football Betting Guide is dropping on Thursday. Our subscriptions include an all-access pass to VSiN best bets, betting tools, and daily articles as well. Sign up today, VSiN.com/subscribe. And as the calendar turns to August today, we will have real college football games on our television at the end of the month. So excited, and so excited to break down more college football as VSiN writer, the professor himself, Aaron Moore, joins the program at Pub Relation Prof on Twitter. Welcome in, Aaron. Thanks, as always, for continuing to break down each of these conferences with us.
Thanks for having me, Stormy.
Today, it is all about the Big Ten with you, Aaron. Michigan, we know, has claimed the Big Ten crown over Ohio State each of the last 2 years, but the Buckeyes getting the slight edge at the top of the odds board here, despite not having their quarterback C.J. Stroud back this season. Both of their season win totals sitting at 10.5 as it looks to the top of the conference. Do you see it as that two-horse race that odds makers seem to, or could there be another dark horse in this league as well?
Yeah, I think, Stormy, you definitely have to look at it just based off of what's happened the last few years. It's Ohio State, Michigan, That's where the conversation starts. That's where the conversation should be focused. And then after that, you look at it. Is it a Wisconsin? Is it a Penn State? Is there a team that can knock off one of these two? And if you just look at what the odds makers are saying and what you just see following and handicapping college football, Ohio State and Michigan are truly national contenders. Everybody else in that conference has the opportunity to get in the discussion, but definitely the discussion should start with those two teams.
Well, let's start. We know this. I mean, and obviously Ohio State and Michigan, but there's so much uncertainty at the quarterback position. But Penn State's team is talented. And I don't know about Drew Allar, the quarterback from Medina, who left Ohio to go to Penn State. That's always interesting to me when a kid that grows up in Ohio goes to Penn State. It tells me maybe, you know, Ohio State didn't want him to play quarterback. But this kid's got great size. He's got a great arm. He's the prototypical quarterback. How good do you think he can be quickly for the Penn State Nittany Lions?
Well, Michael, you're going to focus on Drew Allar just from the star of Penn State because he has that look. He has that Todd Blackledge type of look, and there's this hope that Penn State can return to what they were a decade so ago. I think looking at Allar, how good he can be, to me, that's secondary. This is the same team coached by James Franklin who has considerable issues with game management. And I think that really is where the conversation or the focus is on Penn State is you have Franklin in that same position. And just from a handicapping standpoint, looking at their team, looking at conference wins, how far they can go, I think really it's unfair to say, but it's the focus is with Franklin, I'm not sure Penn State can be that team that gets into the national championship talk first getting through Ohio State or Michigan.
I am a big fan of this team, though, that being said, and the, you know, two running backs that we talked a lot about last year and Catron Allen, Nicholas Singleton should be a stud. I know you said we can't really talk about what Drew Allar could be, but the potential to be a rising star is certainly intriguing. Win total for this squad sitting at 9.5, a 6-1 shot in the league. But let's go back to Ohio State, because I know you do have a bet on the Buckeyes this season as we try to figure out what life is going to be like without C.J. Stroud and some key offensive linemen off to the NFL as well. I haven't seen an announcement on who the starting quarterback will be for the Buckeyes. Kyle McCord has been the front runner, Devin Brown in the race as well. And if there's one thing we know about Ryan Day, it's that he has a very unique ability to get the most out of his quarterbacks, whoever the guy will be. How are you approaching betting this Buckeye squad?
So, Stormy, it's a good juxtaposition talking about Penn State and Allar. With Franklin being that variable, I think it becomes hard to look at anything more than what they've done in the past. Flip that right over, as you said, with Ryan Day. He has success with offense. He has success with quarterbacks. It's probably going to be Kyle McCord. Everything points that way. He obviously has a good relationship with Marvin Harrison Jr. They played high school together. He has the look in that system set up by Ryan Day that really looks to stress offense. In the Big Ten, they stress the offense at Ohio State. McCord can run the offense from the passing standpoint of what he has with Harrison and their other receivers. They have very good talent at the running back position. So I see Ohio State as a much better bet because of the system, the coach, and it's probably going to be Kyle McCord. That's why I like their over, certainly their over in the Big Ten, the 7.5 wins, because of what Day has done. And you can look at their season all coming down to what it usually does the last week of the year at Michigan. And why I'm looking at Ohio State conference over that 7.5, their win total is probably going to come down to that Michigan game. If you look ahead right now, it's Michigan -2.5 in the look ahead line. So if you take Ohio State conference futures and you don't like what happens that week, then you could possibly get on the other side of that Michigan game. But I like going forward with the 7.5 conference wins over,
you know, Aaron, Dave Braun's in an impossible situation, taking over Northwestern. You know, Ben Bryant went to Cincinnati, then he went to Eastern Michigan, and now he's at Northwestern and going to start at quarterback. I know you like them under 1.5 wins, But, I mean, can they beat anybody? I mean, I don't know how you get this program back on track again after what they've been through this offseason.
Michael, that's exactly the reaction I have when I see 1.5 wins. Well, where does the one even come from when you look at Northwestern? Besides all the turnover, besides the scandal, the schedule does not work out well for them. And if I look at it from a Big Ten handicapping standpoint, the under 1.5 conference wins is absolutely my favorite bet. If you're going to look at their schedule and you're going to say, well, where can they get one or possibly two wins that you would lose that under 1.5? It's home against Minnesota, but that's the week after Northwestern goes to Duke. So that Duke game is going to be on the road. Duke is a pretty good team. And then maybe it's the Purdue game. Maybe you could look at home for Purdue for Northwestern to get another win, but that's the week after Northwestern goes to Wisconsin. So I look at it as you said, I don't even know where any wins are on the season. They have UTEP at home on the second week of the season. That certainly isn't a guarantee. Their first game is at Rutgers. Obviously, Schiano is going to want to flex what he has with his program. I just don't see Northwestern winning a game, so I love the -1.5 under conference win.
Yeah, and this is after a season anyways where they won week one at Nebraska and proceeded to go 0-11 the rest of the way, and it looked ugly, including a loss to an FCS program. So I like that play as well, Aaron. I really appreciate that perspective. You mentioned that game that they have against Wisconsin and a new head coach in Luke Fickell coming in, a tremendous hire, in my opinion. I actually was the sideline reporter on Wisconsin's bowl game this past season after he got hired, and he said it really had to be the right place, time, and situation for him to make a move. Ends up at Wisconsin and in a good situation with a ton of returning talent on both sides of the ball. He's a defensive coach. You expect the D to be strong. Bring in Phil Longo as the offensive coordinator and Tanner Mordecai from SMU. Could they go over that 8.5 win total? That might be one of my favorite bets I have in pocket right now, but would love your perspective as someone that's dug so deep into the league.
Definitely the 8.5 is in play. What I took, Stormy, is the over 6.5 conference wins. You can get that at even money. And looking at Wisconsin from a Big Ten handicapping standpoint, let's compare them to a couple other teams, not Ohio State and Michigan, but let's look at Penn State, what we talked about. They still have James Franklin. Let's look at Iowa. They still have Ferentz and that offense that just doesn't produce. So those two teams look stagnant to me. But here comes Wisconsin. As you mentioned, Phil Longo, as you mentioned, Tanner Mordecai, that they have made changes that they needed to make. We know their defense has always been good. We know the weather is what it's going to be like in Madison in the wintertime. But they looked to change something. And I think that's the biggest change in the Big Ten, is bringing in Longo for what he can do. Fickell overall, Wisconsin is making changes. And if you think about Wisconsin's offense the last few years, run it on first down, hope to get 3.3 yards. Run it on second down, hope to get 3.3 yards. Run it on third down, hope to get 3.4 yards. They're going to change that. It's going to be a much different team. That's why I think you're seeing a lot of people talk about the over in both conference and overall wins because of the change in Wisconsin.
And the Big Ten West seems to be theirs to lose as well. Awesome stuff, Aaron. Appreciate your time.
Great job,
Aaron.
Thank you very much.
And I know that Luke Fickell appreciates the style of offense that Wisconsin has become known for, but kind of having that blend with the passing game and Phil Longo will be interesting to see how they change it up. We've got to step aside. Lombardi's List is next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like bonus bets and bet insurance tokens. planning a trip, remember you can also convert BetMGM points into MGM rewards points that you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM Resorts properties located on the Las Vegas Strip or nationwide. Sign up with BetMGM or log on today to get an even bigger piece of the action with BetMGM rewards. Eligibility restrictions do apply. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to please play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. This is the Lombardi Line as we wrap things up here. Before we get to Lombardi's list, where our guy Michael has ranked out his top five NFL stadiums that every fan has to visit, we got to do our pro tip of the show. We do one of these every single day here on VSiN. Every show does them as well. They're searchable at VSiN.com by sport and by show. But today it's actually about the U.S. Women's National Team. Shout out producer Steph, because Team USA has been the favorite the entire time to three-peat in the Women's FIFA World Cup, but after a 0-0 draw yesterday against Portugal, they did still advance out of the group stage to the round of 16, but this is the first time that they have not been a favorite. If you're looking for the best number, you still believe that Team USA can get it done, now's probably the best time for you to get in on this squad. Plus 450, the number, Michael. You all in on Team USA, Women's National Team?
I'm always in on anything Team USA. Right? I'm absolutely always in on that.
Not so as much as Twitter Femi, though.
No. I don't know what goes on. When he gets that Twitter in his hand, boy, he's dangerous now. He becomes a new person. You know, it's like Batman sliding down the bat pole. All of a sudden, he goes from Bruce Wayne to Batman.
It's been awesome. I love it. I love when he gets fired up. I didn't know that he was such a soccer fan, but if you're looking for some great content and stream of consciousness when it comes to the Women's FIFA World Cup, check out Femi Abebefe's Twitter, faux show. England currently your favorite at plus 350, Spain 4-1, and then there is Team USA, the best number you're going to get ahead of the knockout stage at plus 450. Now let's get into this list, Michael. Okay, first of all, how much thought had to go into this bad boy?
It did, and I made a mistake. My fifth team that we have on the list is probably wrong, but I'll talk about the fifth team and another stadium that I think people need to go visit. So, look, I love stadiums. I love old stadiums. I love history. I love walking into a place that you know something happened years ago that made history, and I think that's what you always want to try to do. And some of the newer stadiums are still that way too. So that's kind of what it went to. I gave some thought to this. There's no question about that.
So then before we show number five on the screen, let's get that honorable mention. What's the other stadium?
I should have put Cowboy Stadium, because it's really, you get mesmerized by the scoreboard down in Dallas, the Star. I mean, it's just remarkable. And it's held up over time. It's beautiful. The fans are into it. Part of these stadiums, too, are the fan reaction, the fans being into it, mm-hmm. and the enjoyment that the fans get. I think Cowboy Stadium is a must-visit for anybody, whether you're a Cowboy fan or not. When you walk in there and you see that scoreboard, you cannot take your eyes off of it.
Well, you can't take your eyes off of it half the time when you're just watching it on TV, even. It's mesmerizing was the perfect word for it. That thing is massive, and it really reels you in. I'm always super sad, just because we're talking about NFL stadiums, and I'm a San Francisco 49ers fan, of course. I'm always really sad that I never got to see Candlestick before it got torn down because of exactly what you said there, all of the memories, the history that lived in a building like that. I know it was time, but I'm just sad I never got to go there before it got taken down.
Yeah, when I worked there, every time I would go to the stadium when we played at home, I would always walk over to where Dwight caught the ball and where Joe threw it from. And to me, that those spots on the grass field were just incredible. And the funny thing about Candlestick was that for Sundays at 1, it was really nice. It's the nighttime when the fog came in, it got cold. And when you had nighttime baseball there, it wasn't good. But daytime football was tremendous.
Well, let's hit 5 and 4 because they are two of the younger, more new stadiums in the National Football League. At 5, you put SoFi Stadium, home of the Los Angeles Rams and Chargers, and 4, Allegiant Stadium, right here in Viva Las Vegas. Why did you like them so much?
Well, I think Allegiant, you know, the history of the Raiders is something that's magical. And you see it when you visit there, whether it's the torch of Al Davis or whether it's the histrionics of the franchise, the silver and black. I think that's really kind of neat. And you wish it was still in Oakland. You wish you could still see some of those games there. The Heidi game in particular, where they took the game off the air to put Heidi on NBC. But I think Allegiant does a good job of bringing back the history. I think SoFi is just a great modern stadium. Mm-hmm. It's clean. It's hard to park, but it's one of those places where the sight lines are great. And even though you're not sure what team, you know, when the Chiefs come out there to play and the Chargers, it's a sea of red. It's almost like an indifferent stadium because the Chargers don't pack it in, nor do the Rams. But it's still impressive to go watch that stadium.
SoFi, I got to go out there. I was the MC of the College Football National Championship this past year, and that was my first time in that building. And it was beautiful. And I was talking to Matthew Stafford because he was the honorary captain for Georgia. And it was the it was raining outside at that time. And he goes, this is the first time that I've ever actually seen rain inside this building because it's the half open air. And they never have to deal with it at all because the weather there is so good. But for whatever reason, the national championship, it was raining. And he's like, this is the first time that the half open air thing has ever had an impact in any game here.
Yeah, I mean, that's – and we're going to have that in Buffalo, too. Yeah. They're going to have the half open in Buffalo, which I think is great.
Yep.
Because I think Buffalo and Cleveland, those cities, you want to be outdoors. It's part of the history of the franchise. That's why I don't like the Lions. I mean, I love Ford Field's beautiful, but to me, the Lions are about playing outdoors. Michigan outside. I know they were in the Silverdome for a lot of years, but then when they used to play at Tiger Stadium – that was kind of interesting.
Well, after a couple of teams that you mentioned it don't have a lot of home field advantage, you see a sea of red from Kansas City when they're out there in SoFi. Let's go to Kansas City because that's your number three.
Well, I think that it's important to go see a game there because the volume of noise there is incredible. And a lot of this is based off that. And the sea of red, the enthusiasm of their fan base is incredible. Now, look, there's nothing better. There is nothing better in life, obviously, professionally better than winning in Arrowhead and listening to them all complain and the sound of silence that you get from that stadium. That stadium can be unbelievably loud, and when the scoreboard says the other team won, Cincinnati won, or when the Raiders won there, it was the greatest sound of silence you could ever have.
I would always laugh when the sideline reporter, I always, like Michelle Tafoya is the big one that comes to mind when she'd do the sound meter and like pull the microphone away. This is my report. I can't do it anymore. And then bring it back in. You know, speaking of sound and home field advantage, Lumen Field, another one of those places in Seattle.
Yeah. Another great stadium for noise. I mean, I think they've done a great job of keeping, and the fans are incredible there. They're incredible there. Femi, one of the fans there too. You know, I'm sure he was Twitter tough guy over there, but it's really beautiful. It's so loud. You can't hear yourself think. It's hard to communicate. And once again, when you play there and you win there, the sound of silence is awesome. And it's such a picturesque city, Seattle. If you get a beautiful day, it's incredible.
So many places where we talk about from the betting perspective that home field advantage no longer exists in college football or the NFL. And those are a couple of places where the crowd really does have an impact. Weather also can have an impact in some of these stadiums. I'll let you do the grand reveal. Your number one NFL stadium everyone needs to visit.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a football fan, an NFL fan, you've got to go to Lambeau Field. You've got to walk on that. You've got to go see it. It's completely different than when Bart Starr snuck and scored the touchdown on third down in 1967 to win the game with 13 seconds left to go. I did say he snuck it on third down. Could you imagine what they would have done to Lombardi if he didn't get in the end zone? Walk to that spot, see it. But you could feel the history. Curly Lambeau going back to when he was there, you know, and some of the great players that played on that field. That's the same field, even though they've done a remarkable job of taking this bowl and making it into this incredible stadium. It's just absolutely gorgeous. And you need to go there and feel the history. Go to the Packer Hall of Fame, go to Titletown, and then really walk around the town and see those people that have houses there that'll rent you a parking spot for $40 for the night of the game. It's just great.
Feel the history, know how much the fan base cares. Like, that is the thing in town.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, it's awesome. Definitely a bucket list item. Place I want to go. Any NFL fan would. A rightful number one, I think. Next week when we do Lombardi's List, by the way, we're going to break down the top NFL fan bases throughout the league. So we'll see if there's any carryover potentially from this list here. Remember, if you missed any of today's edition of The Lombardi Line, it's available in podcast form wherever you get your podcast, GM Shuffle as well. New episode dropped yesterday and one more coming out this Thursday. That's a wrap for us today. Michael, great stuff as always, and I will see you again tomorrow.
Stormy. Thank you. I'll see you tomorrow. We got to talk about that Bat Humans list tomorrow.
Yes, we do.